Reading from Matthew chapter 5, verse 13 through 16. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. O magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It is Friday, August 5th, 2022. Today's topic, what is influence? And four friends, including Pastor Jason Schiffel, join me in the studio here as we're going to talk about what is influence, how can we influence people, what is godly influence, I think is the more important aspect. We can all influence people, especially with bad behavior, behavior that is not Christ-like, but we'll talk about that in just a minute. I do want to point out, those of you that have listened for the last few days, tonight is Bob Dickey's homegoing service. There's visitation. They're calling it an open house from 4 to 6 p.m., and then his service is at 6 p.m. at the Gibson City Bible Church in Gibson City, Illinois, on North Route 47. In Gibson City. So Bob, as mentioned on Wednesday, we talked a bit about him, gave him a little of a tribute because he was so instrumental with this radio ministry and involved and a wonderful evangelist for the Lord. Wherever he went, he usually brought up Jesus, loved to talk about the Bible. And so today we celebrate and yet we grieve. And please be praying up Gloria Dickey and his children and his brothers and his family members that certainly are feeling a great loss. And then also tonight from 7 to 9 p.m., so if you're hearing the re-airing of this program at this point, you're probably late unless you got on the road and made it over to Meadowbrook Church. But 7 to 9 p.m. tonight, Unity for Ukraine. And there's a special speaker. In fact, Wayne Shepherd can't make it, but the president of Mission Eurasia is flying in, and he's going to be introduced and share firsthand what's going on in Ukraine. And they'll be raising some funds for food and Bibles and also updating us on some of the happenings there. So that's 7 to 9 tonight at the Meadowbrook Church in West Champaign. So a couple things to be praying about and maybe being involved in. What is influence? Talked about last week, what is power? Holy Spirit power, the power that God entrusts to us, the power for us proclaiming his word. But you also said influence is kind of an aspect of taking that power, and we would hope using it for good, or we all have roles influencing people through what we say, how we act, what we do. And so what is influence? How would you define that?
Well, I wanted to talk about influence because we talked about power, and a lot of times we get the two mixed up. We get influence and power mixed up. And so we chase after power because we think power will give us control. But really what gives us, I wouldn't say control, but allows us to be effective in the spaces that God calls us to be in, is our influence. It is how our character and our integrity is on display in that place. So it isn't power. We can't control a situation or a space, but instead what we want to do is come in, and with the subtlety of the Holy Spirit and the subtlety in which Jesus would come into situations, we want to begin to share God's influence. Remember last week I said there's two kinds of power. There's power over people, which is human power. That's political power, cultural power, ideological power. But there is also power for people, and that is the power that God gives us. The power that God gives us is always about sacrifice. It's always about giving ourselves away to something good. Jesus even said that where you lose your life is where you're actually going to find it. So the places where you sacrifice is actually where you're going to go like, wow, I really felt alive in that situation. I really felt like I was doing something there. I felt like I was stepping into my calling in that place. And that's because we're living the life that Jesus gave us. That's what Paul said right in Philippians. He said, even if I'm being what? Poured out. So Paul saw him going in and ministering in places as being poured out. Now, what was Paul pouring out in that situation, in that place? He was pouring out influence. He was pouring out what God had done in his life into the lives of others. It wasn't power. He didn't walk in the room and people were going like, yeah, Paul, just tell us how it needs to go. In fact, there were a lot of places in the Bible where we see where people tried to say to Paul, do that. And Paul goes, no, I didn't come to do that. I didn't come with wise and persuasive words. I came with a demonstration of the power of the Spirit. And what I love about that is that you have to believe that after that, and we don't have Paul's sermons per se in the Bible. We have a few more evangelistic, but we don't have like a collection of Paul's sermons. But I have to believe that when he began to preach, he began to say, oh, and by the way, that same spirit that I have, you have. That same influence that I have, you have. That same thing that you think is so dynamic, I actually am going to tell you that you have it too. That I'm no better than you. And I think that's why Paul said things to people like, of the sinners, I am chief. And I think people, when he probably said that, were like, wait a second, you got to be kidding me. I mean, because the human inclination is for power. Again, it's for adulation. It's for the clap. It's for that. And instead, Paul was going, no. You guys have the exact same thing that I have. And by the way, I'm actually the chief of sinners. I want you to know just how wretched I am, because when I understand where I am, when I have the right perspective, then I understand who Christ is properly. And so you began with that verse, which is actually in my little notes here that I make, the very few that I do for this program, because I could put a lot of work into notes and then you just go another direction. So I have to be very cognizant that any work I do beforehand might be wasted work. Yeah. So I come in ill-prepared on purpose. But you did read the same passage that I looked at when I was thinking about what it means to have influence, and that is Matthew chapter 5, 13 through 16. So I'd love to go around the table and just say, in this, Jesus' teaching gives two metaphors or two illustrations for what it means to have godly influence. And he uses salt and he uses light. And I'd love to, maybe some thoughts, if you guys have it, about what is salt and light and what does that mean for the life of a follower of Jesus?
Usually when I think of salt and light, I think of that place where you can take your stuff.
Oh, the ministry salt and light.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, one thing to be the light to people, I think, is to identify needs and then meet those needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I can think of many times our church, for example, in Gibson, we helped with the flood. You know, and it didn't matter who needed help. It didn't make any difference. And we helped everyone. We had a bad storm came through there years ago, and we went out. We had to cancel church because our church was damaged. We went out and cut up trees and help people clean up the yards from the damage they have. And whatever is needed out there, just meet that need. And it becomes obvious that you've got something other people don't have.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know the importance of salt, especially in ancient times, as a preservative, that they would rub it into the meat and use it so things didn't spoil. And in the same sense, we as disciples of Jesus are to be into the world to bring about a preserving agent, to point to him that he is, you know, our salvation, and he's the one that can preserve our eternity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because I think even good Bible-believing Christians, they look at the world and we spend a preponderance of the time pointing out how evil and bad it is. Mm-hmm. You know, we're like, look at that's bad and that's bad and that's evil and that's bad. I think if Jesus was walking with us today, which he is in a sense, but if he was walking with us physically today and you went, Jesus, look at how evil and broken that is, he'd go like, duh. Yeah. I mean, the world is a broken place. The world is falling and the world is falling apart. We know that. The Bible tells us that. That's one of the core truths that we believe about what God says about the world. And so Jesus would be like, yeah, okay, so it is broken. So you're spending a lot of time talking about how broken it is. What are you going to do about it? Because Jesus is always continually throughout the Gospels about action. He's always about, what are you going to do about it? And what are we going to do about it is how we begin to flex our influence. And here, the two metaphors are, like we talked about, salt and light. Now, what's interesting is all the examples we really gave are about sacrifice. In fact, salt sacrifices itself. If you sprinkle salt onto something as a preservative, it sacrifices itself to preserve that thing. You come back later and there is not salt on it, is there? The salt has been absorbed into the thing. So the salt itself, by nature of what it does and what it is, sacrifices itself for the preservation of that. We know that the world is rotting and decaying. We know that the world is falling apart. And so God calls us in this time here in Matthew chapter 5. Jesus is saying, I want you to go and sacrifice yourself. into all the places that seem as though they're rotting and decaying so that there can be something else that happens there. Your influence is going to bring some precious preservation into that place, a reminder that though this may be failing and falling away, there is something more, there is something bigger. And in the same way, when you step into a dark room, you immediately feel fearful, you feel lost, you feel, where do I go? You begin to grope and go, where do I think about all the times that I get up in the middle of the night, particularly if I'm traveling, because I always, ever since I passed 50, I have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, sometimes multiple times. And I've traveled, since becoming 50, I've traveled a bunch of times. And whenever I stay in a hotel, I get up in the middle of the night and it's dark, and I always run into something because it's not a place that I'm familiar with. And so I'm walking around, I'm like, ow, ow, ow. I just, you know, and that's the worst time because you've got to go to the bathroom. Oh, it's not the time to stub your toe or do whatever. But in the same way, you know, the world is a dark place. And so there are so many people who are stubbing their toe. That's why they're angry and frustrated. They don't know where they're going or what's coming next. They're trying to feel around and they're hoping that around the corner something's going to be good or right, but it's not. And so we're called in those situations to be light. By the way, isn't it fascinating that Jesus is the one who proclaimed, I am the light of the world. And then what did he do? He conversely gives that to us as a mantle and says, you need to go and be light. But then he also says in this passage, because he knows the human heart, he says, listen, you don't take a light and hide it under a bed. You put it up on a pedestal so everyone can see it. Meaning that your influence is not tucked away and you go like, I don't know, is this a situation where I can bring the way of Jesus into it? Instead, in every situation, you're called to bring your godly influence into that situation. Now, what's fascinating to me, though, is that when we come and we bring our godly influence in that place, what do you think that needs to look like? What does that look like to have your godly influence in a place?
You mean like where we brighten it up, hopefully?
You come into a place and clearly something is awry, something is not going right, something is being either proclaimed, maybe it is an evil place. I mean, who knows? I mean, you go into some place and it is clearly wrong. I mean, that can be on the scale of you go somewhere and it's just a group of guys and they're just telling crude jokes and they just think they're funny and full of themselves, to you go to a place and they are talking about doing some evil, despicable, and wretched things.
Well, I was thinking that I wrote this down. In a sense, it's implied like we shouldn't be surprised because the world is a sinful place. So we shouldn't be like, wow, look at what they're doing, because the fact that they would be doing something good should be amazing. And so we shouldn't be surprised. So when we go into these situations, we shouldn't be like, wow, this is really evil. We should just kind of realize it's going to be evil. And how can we bring hope or love or be a transformative person in the situation?
Yeah, see, what I'm trying to get at is I've seen a lot of places, particularly in this day and age, because everybody has a cell phone and everybody's taking a video. And so you get to see the way people conduct themselves. And I've seen a lot of Bible-believing, Jesus-proclaiming Christians go into situations that are not good situations and then become just another form of not good. You know, whether they begin to yell or scream or they begin to, use caricatures or there is just a lot of things that I've seen where I've been like, oh, brother, you had such an opportunity in that situation to bring Jesus. And instead you brought something else. And it reminded me of this passage that Peter writes in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 12. And if we know anything about Peter, Peter's writing to Christians in Rome who are being persecuted by the emperor. I mean, their life is tough. Their life is hard. And so Peter writes and says, keep your conduct amongst the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak evil against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. Mm-hmm. And so this is crazy because he's saying you need to go into evil places and you need to be honorable. And that's not easy. You know, one of the hardest passages in the Bible for me, I don't know what it might be for you, but one of the hardest passages for me is when Jesus says to speak the truth in love. Because I know how to speak the truth in condemnation. I know how to speak the truth in passionate frustration. I know how to speak the truth in all different kinds of ways. I know how to speak the truth in a debate. I know how to do all that. But to speak it in a loving way, where I can be honorable in that, that's really hard. That's really difficult stuff. And Peter here, the people that he's writing to, I have to believe they read this and they're like, wait, honorable? Do you know what they've done to us? Do you know who they are? In fact, he even highlights that by saying they're evildoers. They don't just think evil thoughts, they do evil things. And he says, even though they do evil things, your influence should be honorable. Why? Because we don't come in just our name, and we don't come just in the name of a church or a body or an organization. We come in the name of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so what Paul is trying to say to the people here is he's trying to say that when you come into a situation and you flex your God-given influence, it should feel like Christ visited that room. It should feel like a day of visitation where people are like, wait, what just happened? We just treated this guy horribly. Why did he act that way? Why did he do that? It should be confounding to the world. And what's fascinating, because I always say context is, does anybody know?
King.
Context is king. I tell my church that all the time, at least once every couple weeks. Jesus begins, before this teaching, he begins by saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. So when you're blessed when you understand that you have a spiritual problem and you desperately need God and Jesus. Blessed are those who mourn. Mourn what? Mourn the fact that you haven't been living that way, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the humble. Why? Because we set aside ourselves and we take on what it means to be who God has called us to be. We'll inherit the earth, which means we'll inherit a future with God. And then he goes, blessed are those who hunger and thirst. Blessed are those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they'll be called the sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. You are blessed when they insult you and persecute you and falsely say evil kinds of things against you because of me. Be glad and rejoice. I don't know anybody who's glad and rejoices in that moment. That's what makes this so difficult. Be glad and rejoice because your reward is great in heaven, for that is how they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Hmm. Jesus says before he even gets to this being salt, this influence you have in the world, that it's going to be hard. That you're going to have to continually keep in front of you the right perspective, who God is. That I was spiritually bankrupt, that I desperately need God, that I can't operate in the way he calls me to operate without his mercy, without his humility, without his long-suffering, without his perspective, because I'm going to face persecution in difficult situations. And what am I going to do when I get in those situations? And we get a choice then, right? We can act more like the world, or we can act more like Jesus. Well, here's the problem that we all have. Is that the longer we've lived in the world, the longer we've been preconditioned to act like the world. That's why Paul says, continually be transformed into the image of Christ. Continually be conformed into the image of Christ. Continually allow yourself for Christ to change you, for his influence to influence you so that you might influence the world. That seems difficult, right?
In today's society, maybe, but then you have to consciously think, that person maybe checkout person or drive-through person is having a difficult day too. You have to seriously think about how your attitude is when you are being checked out.
Yeah.
You could get mad, and I've seen people be real mad with the checkout people. And I think these people are just checkout people. They're working, and it's not their fault that the price didn't come up right or whatever. And it's our attitude of how we do that. Do you smile when you get your order? Yeah. Do you say, God bless you? They don't get that. Those people, wherever we're shopping at, they don't get that. They get more glum people than they get people that'll... A smile is salt, in a way.
I think a smile is one of the greatest tools that we've been equipped with by God to change the temperature and tone in a room.
Yes.
In fact, before we recorded this radio program, I plan to take my kids to the pool later this week, and I needed a swimming suit. So I went to the store to get a swimming suit, and as I'm checking out at the store for the swimming suit, the woman says, do you have our rewards program? And I said, no, and I know what this is. This is the precursor to me getting offered some kind of credit card, which I really don't like it when they do that. But she says to me, as I've had in many places, she says, oh, would you like to sign up for that today? And I say, no. And I see the look on her face because I'm sure she gets no's all day long. And then this is what I always say, and I'm not saying I'm nailing it, but this is what I always say. I always say, but I want to thank you so much for asking. And this woman in this moment, because it just happened, she kind of got this smile and she just looked at me. And I got to think, because nobody else has thanked her for asking the question. Instead, they're always just mad she asked the question. And in a very simple way, I think like you're saying, Sharon, in a very practical way, we can change the temperature and influence a situation to where it kind of confounds somebody. They're kind of like, what was that about? And we do it as we go because that's what Jesus called us to do.
A little salt makes bland food taste better. Well, being a little nice.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same
thing. Doesn't take a whole lot of effort.
A little light sprinkle makes a dark room more tolerable.
Yeah. Mm.
I'm going to close out with that 1 Peter 2:12. In fact, Jason, I had that already written down. That was going to be one of my opening verses, so I didn't want to take away all your thunder. You didn't know what I would share, but I love this verse. Live such lives among the pagans. Now, the pagans were the evil, the bad. They didn't fear God. They did all sorts of crazy things, so it's a real kind of slam. Live such good lives among these pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, and so they will accuse you. Don't be surprised that people aren't going to like you, but live in such a way that they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day that he visits us. And that's that influence that we want to have, that those people that are pagans, they may in fact glorify God. Maybe those seeds that are planted or that lights that shined on them woos them towards God, or the realization, gosh, there must be a God. You use this word a lot, and I like it, because they're confounded. They're like, why is this person acting nice when nobody else is acting nice? There's some difference about that.
Well, isn't it interesting that the Bible continually seems to believe that we're supposed to go out and mix it up with people who are evil, who are other than. Now, that doesn't mean that we conduct the same evil that they do. We're a party of the same evil that they are. But the Bible seems to believe that we're supposed to get in their space to bring our God-given influence. The same as that passage said, and one of my favorite passages is when Paul writes and he says he can't wait to come and visit in Romans chapter 1, the church in Rome. And he says that so I can be encouraged by your faith and mine, both mutually. But then he says this after that. He says in verse 14, I'm obligated both to the Greeks and the barbarian, both the wise and the foolish. So what Paul says is, he says, I can't wait to come and hang out with you guys, the Christians, because we're going to have a good time. We're going to encourage each other's faith. But just I want you to understand, I got to go and hang out with the pagans and the barbarians too.
Yeah.
And he wants them to know that part of his itinerary is to bring his godly influence into a space with people who know nothing about it. I mean, the Gentiles are one thing, the pagans are one thing, but the barbarians, they were the worst, so they wore the hairy underwear. I mean, they were the worst of the worst. And so Paul says, I got to go hang out with those guys. You know why? Because they're a little crazy, they're a lot of fun, and they need Jesus.
Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns, Jason Schiffo, Ron and Sharon Fernald, and Alaric Shoffley with the Ministry of Great News Media. God bless you and have a great day, night, and weekend.